As Kamala Harris skips the Al Smith dinner and Governor Gretchen Whitmer mocks the Eucharist, the Democrats seem hell-bent on proving that they might just be the largest hate group in the nation. Plus, why did the American Catholic bishops take $129 million from the Biden administration last year? It's all connected, folks, and it's not good. And finally, my last word on the November election. Good evening again, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Matt. This is The Remnant Underground. So, the open season on Catholics continues. First, we had the Olympic Games in Paris some months ago, where the entire world had front row seats to global mockery of the Last Supper. What's with these people? I mean, really.
They can't help it.
They can't help it. Even when you're a little kid, like your mother tells you, you don't make fun of other people's religion. I mean, that's like the lowest form of humor. It's so stupid. But it's going on literally everywhere. The other night, Democrat psycho governor Gretchen Whitmer decided that she's a 14-year-old Christophobic nut job as well.
For taking part in a viral Instagram video where she places a chip in the mouth of liberal podcaster Liz Plank, who accepts it while on her knees. Many Catholics are saying it's a clear shot at the sacrament of Holy Communion.
Thank you, ladies, and do call us when the shuttle lands, won't you? And then there was the Al Smith dinner just last night in New York City, where Kamala Harris became the first Democrat presidential candidate since Walter Mondale to take a pass on the event. Not a big fan of the event, by the way. It's all Dolan and all of that crazy. But, you know, still unbelievable that she decides she's just not going to do it. And we all know how it ended for old Walter Mondale back in 1984. Maybe Walter can throw up on the screen an image of the electoral map in that particularly proud moment to be a Minnesotan. Every single state went ragging, except for that little blue one up there. That's where Governor Walz is from, by the way. A guy who's running around right now dressed as Elmer Fudd, and nobody knows why. Have you noticed this? He literally looks like Elmer Fudd. I guess he thinks that's cool. I'm not sure. It is absolutely such a great time to be from the great state of Minnesota, the state where nothing is allowed except for hacking up children's genitalia and killing as many babies as you possibly can. They are into that big time. So Kamala didn't make the Al Smith dinner, but she did send a little video message over in which she got right down to, you guessed it, a little more mockery of Catholics.
Right now I'm trying to record my speech for tonight's dinner.
Oh yeah, I know. I just want to say that I'm Catholic and tonight is one of the biggest dinners next to the Last Supper.
It is a very important dinner and it's an...
You know, the most shocking thing, and you all know I've really got some strong reservations about what's happening with Team Trump and the GOP and all that. We're going to get into that in a minute. But what's so shocking is that this country has become so pathetic that Donald Trump isn't up by 20 points over this idiot. I can't even believe how close it is. I saw Rasmussen has now got them tied nationally. The only poll that's got them up right now, Trump up is Fox by 2. I know the polls don't matter, but still you would think, yikes, look at her, you know? And now they're out there mocking Catholicism. She doesn't, the Bret Baier interview the other night was simply stunningly bad for her. I don't know. But I guess, you know, I mean, if you are running against someone whose only qualification is the bloody sacrament of abortion in this ritual, this pagan ritual religion of theirs, maybe it wasn't the best time to drop your emphasis on being pro-life. Maybe that's what we're seeing here, because I can't understand why Trump isn't blowing them away unless it's because of the fact now that, reports have it, millions of Christians are going to sit this one out. Now, you can blame them if you want. We're going to get into this in a minute. But you got to wonder about the strategy here, the closer that we get, about dropping the emphasis on being pro-life when you're up against pro-abortion demons like this. But in any case, she skips. She feels free to skip the Al Smith dinner, whatever. I guess that makes sense when you've got pretty much most of the Catholics probably in the bag once again. And more to the point, the leading American Catholic prelate providing the incantation at the Democrat National Convention this year a few months ago, remember?
Let us pray. We praise you, O God of all creation. Quicken in us a resolve to protect your handiwork. You are the source of every blessing that graces our lives and our nation.
Really exciting speaker, Eminence. No, really, that was good. That was fantastic. And as His Eminence is doing this, there's a truck out in the parking lot, as y'all remember, handing out abortion pills and vasectomies, apparently, as well. In the parking lot, while the Cardinal Archbishop of Chicago, a guy who just felt it was absolutely necessary for him to ban the Latin Mass, because that's a big problem with the church today, he's inside doing the incantation for the Democrats. And you wonder when the asteroid's going to hit. Maybe this country is just really, really deserving of a chastisement. I don't know, you know? Yeah, so I don't suppose old Kamala is particularly worried about the Catholic vote, is she? Especially now, you can't make it up. The American bishops took in $129 million from the Biden administration just last year. Just in 2023, $129 million to help with that border issue, welcoming the other, right? We appreciate the efforts by the Biden administration, writes Bishop Mark Seitz, to reassert and grow our nation's proud tradition of welcoming refugees. Thanks, Mark, and do call us when the shuttle lands as well, won't you? Yeah, we say, as a grandson of immigrants, this is so incredibly insulting, these buffoon bishops of ours, pretending like they don't know the difference between legal immigration, an illegal kind, and, you know, country with a border, country without a border, right? My grandparents came over, they did everything, they learned English, right? They became citizens, proud citizens of this country. We're not anti-immigrant. But yeah, an open border just being flooded by God knows whom? Yeah, that's a bit of a concern, Bishop Mark. But there you go. There's the big problem in the world today. The woke Catholic Church, which has become, I mean, I'm sorry, it's become a whore. It's become, the Protestants always call us the whore of Babylon. When you're taking $129 million to help the Biden administration wreck this country, well, it sounds like the activities of a whore to me, you know? So everything's kind of getting weird. Speaking of weird, this election, I know everybody can't wait for it to be in the past. It's just been one of the strange. I don't know why this one's different, but this one is different. It's got a lot of people really strung out. This is going to be, in fact, our last Remnant Underground for a while. We're just going to kind of hit the road. We're going to sit back and let people say their prayers and think about this and talk about this with their priests and go in and vote according to their conscience and be done with it. Okay, so as luck would have it, we are going to be, or Providence would have it, we are going to be covering the end of the synod. We're going to be hitting the road, so we'll be over in the Vatican next week, covering the synod on homosynodality. So if you want to follow me on Twitter to see how the synodal train wreck ends, feel free to do that. Also, on thenewspaper.com, we'll be covering that. Of course, on YouTube, on remnant-tv.com. Whatever's going on over there, we will cover it. Then when we come back, briefly, we're going to head down to Brazil. I'm so excited about this. We're going to do a lot of coverage on this. Just a massive Christ the King conference in Rio de Janeiro. Very excited. We're talking 1,000 strong, maybe more, people in attendance down there. So a lot of really, really good and exciting things are happening as the clans around the world recognize an urgent need to unite, you know. And by the time all this happens, the U.S. election will be a happy memory, and we can all move on. As Joe Biden would say, we'll move on. Okay? This has been a bumpy ride, you know? But I really, truly want to thank everybody for what I think to be a very important, a very Catholic pre-election debate and discussion that we've been having here. And I know it's been back and forth. It's been a wild ride. I know, you know, and it's a tough question. Been a lot of feelings running high, a lot of tempers running high. A lot of people are grateful that they're getting some sort of direction based on Catholic principles, since the bishops of this country are out taking $129 million from the Biden administration and trying to decide what's the worst evil, borders or baby killing, right? That's what they're doing. So I think what we've been doing here on this show has been greatly appreciated, but I want you to know we really appreciate the discussion. I know the comments have been coming in, and it's been really, I think, very healthy. In fact, my staff just told me last night that in spite of all the controversy, which has been going on, obviously, over the course of the past 28 days, Remnant, this is so ironic, Remnant TV has racked up 453% increase in subscribers to our YouTube channel. Is this right, Walter?
Yeah, a little bit more than that.
I don't even understand this. This is crazy. That's a 453% increase to our subscribers to YouTube, and the likes to dislikes ratio is a whopping 99.7%. You sure you got that right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating because this is the way Providence works. We had pretty much given up on YouTube, still more or less. Well, I don't know what to do after this, so we moved off YouTube. Our remnant-tv.com site is thriving. But then all of a sudden, there's a lot of you that are coming new to YouTube. Welcome. So glad you're here. So we'll just play it out and see what happens, you know. But in any case, this audience is the best. And I want to thank you so much for your willingness to have this kind of discussion out. It's been really profitable for us as well, very worthwhile for us as well, I should say, to rehash this, to go over Catholic teaching, to try to get this right, right? Because again, I know it's not easy. It's not easy for any of us, what's happening right now. And I think, you know, I'm one of the very, very few traditional Catholic commentators, this show, that has actually expressed a willingness to have some serious reservations about what Team Trump is doing, about the GOP flip-flop on life and family issues. Because everybody's so terrified of Cammy and the commies and the alternative, they're just saying, I'm going to almost put up with anything. Well, that's not how it works here on this show. Always and forever, we're going to base whatever information, whatever commentary we give to you, we're going to base it on traditional Catholic teaching, not just mere opinion, but the teaching of the church. Could I get it wrong in how I interpret this? Maybe. That's what we're trying to figure out. Should we just take the word of a priest or two out there who's saying one thing or the other? Of course not. Of course not. When it comes to politics, when it comes to a lot of things with the church in this country, we long ago learned you can't just rely on the priest to tell you what the score is. We have to come together and figure this out on our own based on the research of Catholic teaching, you know? So for the most part, it's been a really good run, and I'm really happy with the way it went. Those of you who might be a little bit upset with me, I want to, you know, use this last show before we kind of take a break for a while. I want to let you know, no hard feelings. I understand. I understand what it's like to have a house full of kids and go, man, Kamala Harris is over here. Donald Trump is over here. No thank you, Cammy. I totally get that, you know? So this is not about judging people or virtue signaling or being sanctimonious, you know what I mean? And I think most of you understand what's actually at stake here, okay? And I think for those of you who might not quite know, maybe those of you who are newer to the show, I want to maybe just go out, because this is it. We're done talking about this election. As I say, we're going to pray about it and just go vote our conscience, and we're done talking after this program. But if you are still not sure, you know, I want to ask you one question that I think might help unite whatever divisions may have set in. And the question is simple. I want to ask you this. Why do you think, those of you who have been critical of me over this, our position on Trump, why do you think I've taken a stand that I have on Donald Trump over the past couple of months? Serious question. Think about it. Why would I do that? Am I a never-Trumper? Well, you know that's not true. We have an entire video library for you to check out to disqualify that suggestion. When I was staunchly supporting Donald Trump, you will remember, the Underground was picking up millions of views. I remember the one from 2020 on Davos and Donald Trump, what was it called? The plot to cancel Trump. That thing has got to be up to over 30 million views right now. Maybe do we have a clip on that one? Just play that real quick.
So ask yourselves why they hate this man. These folks, these men, they hate God. They hate the unborn. They hate the traditional family. They hate you. And they hate Donald Trump, whose political opponents, by the way, right now are knocking statues of saints to the ground. They're beating up cops, and they're burning flags.
So that's the level, those of you who are new to the show, in which we were passionately defending and promoting Donald Trump. Because why? Because he said he would stand with the unborn. Because he said he was pro-life. Because he said he was pro-God. Because he said he was pro-family, right? All those things were so wonderful. We said, let's give it a try, right? And because we were promoting him at the time, I got my little 15 minutes of fame. I got to feel what it's like to be a little celebrity out there in the world. And waiters were literally picking up my bill. I go to dinner with four or five people, and the waiter would just pick it up and say it's been taken care of. I had never gone through that before. You know, people in malls, people in airports wanting selfies. It was weird. I found out one thing. I wouldn't like to be a celebrity for any length of time. It was very uncomfortable. But this was because we were being recognized. Our videos were so successful. I'm going to make a point here on this. So successful because I was fully behind Donald Trump, somebody who I never thought was actually at his heart and soul necessarily a tried and true pro-lifer. But he said he was going to stand with them, with the babies, with us, you know? So again, why would it be that now, fast forward to 2024, why would it be that we would be taking issue with Donald Trump? What would be the personal thing that's involved here? What do I have to gain from this? Unless it's a matter of conscience, why would I be doing this? Serious question. And if it's a matter of conscience, why would anybody be upset with me? You don't think I would love to go back to those days where we were hitting them out of the park every week, million strong views? That's a pretty heady feeling. But I can't. Why not? So what this is then, the discussion that we've been having for the past couple of months, is over conscience. Not just for me, but for lots of you, tens of thousands of you who have expressed the same dilemma that you're having right now. You don't want Kamala Harris. You don't want communism. If you decide that in your heart of hearts you absolutely cannot vote, you understand the ramifications of that. You're not voting for Kamala Harris. Right? And what a lot of the critics don't understand is how difficult that is for somebody who had already supported Trump. It's kind of heartbreaking. This is a heartbreaking time for us. We were never, never Trumpers. We fought tooth and nail against the never Trumpers, right? And yet the arguments that are being used by some of the critics sound like they're just vintage 2016 anti-never Trumpers. Well, the thing is, we were never anti-Trumpers, never Trumpers. Something has happened. And what has happened is that we are struggling to reconcile our understanding of what the Catholic Church teaches with voting for candidates who have suddenly flip-flopped, who have compromised on the issues that matter most to us. No, we're not voting for a saint. No, we're not voting for a pope. No, we're not voting for Jesus Christ. It has nothing to do with the candidate. It has to do with us and whether or not we want to put the blood on our hands. That's what it is. No, we're not expecting perfection from Donald Trump. We proved that in 2016 when we voted for him, the twice-divorced Manhattan businessman, right? He wasn't exactly a daily communicant when we said, vote for him. So this whole idea that we're voting for perfection and you need to find a difference between perfects and saints and politicians, no, that's misplaced when it comes to us. These are the things, these issues, pro-life, pro-family, these are the issues that caused us to put everything on hold and say, okay, let's give this guy a try. That's the only thing. It wasn't like he was some daily communicant who said, well, his personal life, he's so pious, he's such a good holy Catholic. That's why we're voting. No. The only reason we voted for him was over this issue over which we now have a massive compromise. Abortion, pro-life, pro-family, pro-traditional marriage. You see? You see what the nature of the dilemma? I haven't changed anything about me, about what I think. Not a thing. You know, even now, I would love to be on, what is the Musk thing? The dark mega and all that kind of, you know, whatever they're doing, the theatrics. It's kind of fun. I'd love to be on the Team Elon thing, Team Tucker, Team what's the Kennedy guy, you know, going after these demonic lunatics, sending them back to hell where they all belong. That'd be great. But I can't. And I wish I could. You know? Again, I don't want President Cammy the Commie. It's insulting to say, what do you want? Hey, you want Cammy? No, I don't.
You want open borders?
No, I don't. But as a Catholic, you can't purchase a pass for yourself by compromising what you believe. Not to this extent. So it's a terrible argument
to say, what do you want, communism?
No, but even if communism was going to be saddled on me, was going to be impressed on me, pushed on me, foisted on my kids, I still can't violate my conscience to spare myself
communism.
You see how it works? Can't do it. The church teaches, my church, the Catholic Church teaches, for example, in the encyclical letter that I just cited last week, Casti Canubi, 1925, by Pope Pius XI, the church teaches, and that was the constant reiterated teaching of the church, of the popes, the great social teaching popes, that Catholics cannot be guided by mere expediency. Now, this is just what goes through my head. I'm not saying you need to accept my interpretation. But what that encyclical letter said, but borrowing and repeating the teaching of his predecessors, Pius XI says, now you can't be guided by mere expediency. You must obey the moral law. Voting for a candidate who supports any form of abortion, even if perceived as a lesser evil, amounts to indirect cooperation with evil. This is how I take Casti Canubi and plenty of other teachings of the Catholic Church, including what St. Thomas Aquinas says. So you see what I'm saying? I know you do. I know most of you do. I'm really struggling over here with this. I'm not your enemy, those of you who are critical of this show, for asking these questions. I want to vote for the guy. But then I see a video like this and I just go, God help us, what should I do?
The federal government still plays a role in whether or not women have access to abortion pills. They're used in about 2/3 of all abortions. As president, would you block abortion medication?
First of all, the Supreme Court just approved the abortion pill, and I agree with their decision to have done that, and I will not block it.
J.D. Vance calls it a medication and says he too supports it.
The Supreme Court made a decision saying that the American people should have access to that medication. Donald Trump has supported that opinion. I support that opinion.
Just to be clear, you support mifepristone being accessible?
Yes, Kristen, I do.
For the first time in 40 years, there will be no call. There is no call right now. No call for an abortion ban in any of the major political parties in the United States of America. For the first time in 40 years. And when he was asked about this, the son of Donald Trump said, yes, that's where my father has always been.
For the first time in 40 years, the Republican platform does not call for a federal abortion ban. It no longer defines marriage as between one man and one woman, but it doesn't. So is this a sign that your father is moving to the center in some ways or on some issues?
Yes, I think he's always been there on those issues, to tell you the truth. And I think that's reflective of who my father is and what he believes in. And I think that's reflective of my wife, Laura, who runs the RNC, and clearly what she believes in. And I'm proud of the party. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, this country has real holes in the roof, and you've got to fix those holes, and you've got to stop worrying about the little, you know, spot on the wall in the basement.
So Melania Trump comes out, she says she's pro-abortion, and then at the same time, she says her husband is a big backer of gay marriage. You'll remember.
Donald is the first president to enter the White House supporting gay marriage. Donald is also the first president to appoint an openly gay official to his cabinet.
If you're a traditional Catholic, chances are pretty good that I'm the one who convinced you to support Donald Trump in the first place. Because I'm the first traditional Catholic I was aware of who said, I think we can give this guy a try. Most people are like, no way, it's Rubio, man. It's not going to be Trump. It was Jeb Bush, anybody but this lunatic goofball from Manhattan, Donald Trump, right? A Batman character, right? That they called him at the time. So I was among the first traditionals to say, this is different. Let's give it a try. And now I find myself in this ridiculous position of struggling because if Trump wins, the Republican Party becomes America's second pro-abortion political party. You just saw the clips. Yes, we're in favor of that. No, we don't want a ban. Yes, we want IVF, right? It just becomes a second political party that's pro-abortion. You say, well, yeah, but they're not going to kill as many. And I say, well, I don't understand why that matters. I don't ask a serial killer how many he killed versus some other serial killer. You killed 20? Okay. You killed 10? You're my guy. I don't see that it makes any difference. And our system of jurisprudence doesn't see any difference in that either. One serial killer is 20, one kills 10. They're both going to prison for life, right? So the actual number, to me, doesn't really determine the morality. You see? And for the first time now, it's just fine, absolutely fine, as you see up on your screen right now, for Catholics to vote for pro-abortion politicians. Well, that's a first. That's happening now. And even more concerning, every Republican strategist from now on will know that they can run any pro-abortion candidate they want, and they're still going to get the pro-life vote. You see, it's like dominoes or like a house of cards. It's all going to start collapsing now, right? Without this idea that that one party was pro-life. We're taking all that out, you see? When I was at Christendom College, you know, there was a sense of the crusade. Just down Highway 66, about 50 miles, is Washington, D.C., when I was at Christendom College. And so the students would do the Shield of Roses on Saturday morning. They were big-time activists in the pro-life movement. And I knew, watching and talking to them, many of them got involved with Heritage, they got involved with Free Congress, right, in D.C., because there was this great, exciting opportunity of a pro-life party. I know it's got its problems, and you had the Mitt Romneys, and you had the rhinos that were not really pro-life, but still, that party in D.C. had to acknowledge the pro-life influence, had to take it into account. And so you had this crusade mentality with a lot of young people. They wanted to get involved. They wanted to get into politics. Why? Because there was a point. Because Ronald Reagan was pro-life. There's a lot of presidents that said, absolutely, we're pro-life, one after the other. Over the past 20 years, 50 years, right? Donald Trump, I'm pro-life. Every child, born and unborn, is a gift from God. What happens? Boom, he beats Hillary Clinton, right? That's what was going on. And that's going to stop going on now in the long term. You say, well, man, I'm going to keep fighting. I'm going to keep fighting, probably. No, you won't. No, you won't. You'll stay pro-life. You'll try to keep it together. But the crusade is gone now. Trump wins, everybody's going to go like, see, we don't need the pro-lifers. We don't need those embarrassing people, those little holier-than-thou folks with the rosaries. We don't need that. Come on, let's get serious. This is serious. That's what's going to happen, and that's what history shows happens every single time. You never go back in the direction of becoming more of a crusader, more of a religious warrior for Christ and the unborn. That's just the opposite. Once you cut it, you're done. You move on. So do you see what happens long term? I'm not even saying that Donald Trump is aware of this. I'm presuming he's not actually aware of this, because the life thing has never been his big issue. Everybody knows that, right? So he's like, hey, yep, kind of done with it. But for us, we know that happens. We know what's going on. So do you understand why we're concerned? Long term, decades, not just November. Friends, there's been a major moral shift in conservative American politics happening right before your eyes. And just so that we don't have to get Kamala Harris and Tim Walz two goofballs, we're kind of all afraid, so we're going along with it. And that's been the problem. This is going to have ramifications for years and years. The 2016 platform mentions God 15 times. The 2024 Republican platform mentions him twice. The 2016 platform has 9 powerful statements in defense of the unborn. The 2024 platform removes virtually all of the 2016 pro-life language, including the explicit application of the 14th Amendment to the unborn, and then goes on to positively mention birth control and IVF. The 2016 platform defines marriage as, wait for it, between one man and one woman. The 2024 platform drops any definition of marriage at all. Okay, so let's be really clear. I guess the same. We have to try to keep it together. That's the main thing. Some sweetheart I saw the other day, like, I do try to watch, read, look at your comments as much as I can. And I noticed a friend, somebody who I know, said, you know what, I'm going to vote for Trump. I can tell Michael Matt, he just wants everybody to stay together, keep the clans united. We can't let this blow us apart. And I was like, God bless you, sister. Way to go. That's exactly what it is. We need to stay together. It's not our fault. We didn't come up with this change of this revolutionary change in pro-life politics. We're just trying to do the best we can. We just want a better country, a better life for our kids, right? So if you want to vote for Donald Trump because you think he's the lesser of two evils, you know, that's what your priest told you, my friends, go right ahead. That's what I'm saying. It's all about conscience. It's all about conscience. Don't tell people they must vote, but you can say, you know what, it's so bad. I'm in Pennsylvania. My vote's going to make a huge difference. I want to vote for Trump, and I think I'm going to take Father so-and-so's word that it's the lesser of two evils. God bless you, right? You're not my enemy. You're just trying to follow your conscience in a really tough time, just like I'm trying to follow mine. We're still brothers. Our issue is still this religious, the spiritual war, the traditional Catholic restoration. That's what it's always been. Trump, remember, as I said so many times, was buying us a little time, we thought. I think he did. I think that actually worked. Thank God for that. Thank God for Trump for doing that, right? But our war stays the same. We're going to keep fighting like we always have. I'm telling you, I know this to be the fact. I know this to be the case. Kamala Harris, this little idiot Tim Walz, who I know very well, he's my governor. If, in fact, God help us, they win this election, they are going to be such lame duck. They're being put there because they're already lame ducks by puppeteers, right? So you're going to have this whole phenomenon of the Elon Musk and the Kennedys and the Tulsi Gabbards and the Tucker Carlsons and the, you know, Candace Owens. All these people are still going to be looking. I would take it even all the way over to the left, the center left of a Bill Maher, who's going to be humiliated and embarrassed. You saw what they did to Kamala and Tim on Saturday Night Live just last weekend, friends. Get used to that. Get used to it, because if they win, that's going to continue. Don't let anybody tell you there isn't going to be a massive fight here. You say, yeah, but what about like the globalists, the Great Reset folks? Well, we'll see what happens there. They're losing power. But the last time we got locked down by those guys, Donald Trump was in office. So we don't know for sure what's going to happen here. What we do know is there's going to be a hell of a fight. These people like Kennedy, when we disagree on the life issues there too, but they're not going to go away. There is a unified fight against them that's going to continue no matter what happens in November. So don't freak out. Keep your constituents together. Keep your family together. Keep on your knees. Keep saying your rosary, right? The traditional Catholic clans need to stay together. Nothing is more important than that. And don't forget, if you're in a blue state, it doesn't even matter. Here in Minnesota, Trump fans pulled out a long time ago. They're not here campaign. There's no chance. They have no chance here in Minnesota. So it's a no-brainer. I'm not going to violate my conscience. I live in Minnesota. No, I'm not going to vote. Violate my conscience when I live in a blue state. You see, there's all sorts of other things to discuss, you know? A no vote is not a vote for Kamala Harris in Minnesota, believe me. There are some really good pro-life people we can write in here, and we're going to do that. We're going to encourage that. We're going to support those guys, right? We have to do that in a state where it doesn't even matter because Trump's not even an issue here. Not even campaigning in Minnesota. So then the question comes, okay, what are you going to do now, man? And what are you going to do if you can't vote? I'm sorry, but I think that's becoming a bit of a boomer question. You know? I don't know. I got to vote. It's my sacred duty before God. Is it? Where is that in the cat? Is sacred duty before God to vote in a system like this one? Is it really? Let yourself off the hook. Donald Trump has been saying, for years, it's fixed, it's rigged, they're cheating. So if it's fixed and it's rigged and they're cheating, we have no moral obligation to play along with that nonsense, right? So these are not, I'm not saying don't vote, don't get me wrong. I'm saying these are the considerations everybody's factoring in right now. And if somebody says, you know, I'm not going to violate my conscience, that person's not your enemy. That person is trying to be a serious, conscientious, American, Catholic, Christian voter. You see? And it's important that we don't lose sight of that. You know, not being able to vote, that's not the end of the world. History is full of heroes who could not vote, who had no political say in what happened to them. We tell the stories over and over and over again, the Vendeans in Western France, right? Do you think they had a vote? Were they going to put that little sticker, I voted? Are you teasing me? But they were heroes. The Cristeros down in Mexico in the 1920s, you think they had little stickers, I voted? It's laughable. The early Christian martyrs, you think they had some sort of say in what happened? No. They couldn't vote their way out of it, what was happening to them. So what did they do? In the end, they fought. Well, they believed, first of all. They kept the faith, which meant they fought. They died, and their witness to the truth undermined the revolution, and that ain't nothing. That's not insignificant. The reason we're still telling the stories of those people who didn't have the vote sticker on their chest from past, from the history, is because they played a significant, a tremendous role in the history of the world, in the Christocentric history of the world. So don't let anybody ever tell you that for some reason you come to a point where you can't vote. Well, now you're just out of it and you don't have any part to play. Oh, yes, you do. You keep the faith. You keep those beads going. You keep praying every night. You raise your children to love and serve God. You're a warrior. You're a champion. You're fighting the most important battle there is. And the extent to which we can participate in the politics of a given time period like now, well, that's what we're trying to figure out as faithful Catholics. That's what we've been doing down here in the underground for a long time. And honestly, I think most of you understand that, even if some of you may disagree with me on how we're going to vote. I think we get it. We're trying to do our best. And that's why we're just going to, as I say, take a little break from the underground, get on the road a little bit, go out and meet the clans, and we're going to say our prayers, and all of us are going to vote our conscience. And we're going to agree together as soldiers of Jesus Christ, as the children of light, that we all missed the clarity of 2016. That was fun, wasn't it? That was a hoot. You remember how you felt when Donald Trump comes out there and says, on the mall, you know, we believe every child, born and unborn, is a gift from God, right? Remember when he comes out on Christmas? You know, we celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. You think we don't miss that? Man, I wish he would go back to that. That was really a great moment. It was a reaffirming moment to be alive, wasn't it? And to be a Christian at that time, to see how it worked. The grace of God working through this pro-life movement, which is a pro-God movement, right? It was beautiful. And we'd all like to get behind that again. I sure would. I would love to get behind an uncompromising hero, or what seems to be an uncompromising hero once again, more than anything else in this world right now. That's what I want. We all want that. We all want the evil alternative to fall and fall hard, flat on its evil little satanic butt, right? Forever, slide back into hell. That's what we all want. But long time and for years to come, long term, years to come, friends. This is the thing that goes through my mind, right? And this is the thing that I think I have an obligation to share with you, right? We must hang on to the fundamental principles. That's more important than sparing ourselves open borders and communists and all the evil things that might befall us. Because from hanging on to those principles, that pro-life, pro-God, pro-family, political counter-revolution, from that movement will rise up the heroes that we saw in the past once again, and they will vanquish and they will drive these evil demons out of our country. If you lose that body, if you lose that counter-revolution, where do they come from? You know? We need to keep that political pro-life movement, pro-God movement alive, friends, and viable. Not just alive, but viable as a political force. If we are to prove to our children and to our God that we as a nation are even worth saving anymore. Because if in order to save our country, good men are forced to vote for the slaughter of little babies, little unborn babies, if that's the case, well, maybe this godforsaken country just isn't worth saving anymore. And maybe what it needs is for its men to stand up and suffer and die for those little ones. Maybe that's what's needed more than anything else. Maybe that will save us from the divine chastisement this time. Maybe if we hold our Catholic ground, maybe if we do the right thing, maybe if we never become them, maybe then we will earn the right to be protected by a good God, even in this world. When I asked Bishop Athanasius Schneider the other night about all this, he said something very hopeful and very short. I want to share it with you.
We are called to be at least simple, clear witnesses of the truth, of our convictions. Of course, it's not everyone called to martyrdom. But at least, I think it's a basic requirement to be a true Christian, the courage. Courage to witness, the truth, even to the extent of some negative consequences in your life. But God will recompense it, even here on earth. And this was always the way which the Christians lived.
God will recompense our suffering, even here on earth, from the lips of one of the holiest men I know. So he's not trying to be a big hero and telling us we got to go out and get ourselves martyred. In fact, he says very few people are called to martyrdom. That's usually the way it is, isn't it? Few have to suffer and then everything changes. But even here on earth, your sacrifice will not, if we are called to sacrifice, it's not going to be in vain. God takes care of his own. And that's kind of what I'm saying. If we become them, we lose the right to lay claim to that protection from God. You know what I mean? Even if we didn't want it, even if it wasn't our idea, out of fear we went along with it. So this, friends, this is no time for us to panic. As traditional Catholics especially, we always knew this day was coming, right? We knew there would be a price to pay after the human element of Christ's church pretty much collapsed as it has. We knew this was coming. So it's just a question of how do we deal with it? How do we deal with a rather harsh reality as children of God, children of light, hopefully, right? Now that our civilization has betrayed God and has spent the last 50 years or so wiping out the unborn, don't you see? That has consequences. That's what we've been doing. To say nothing of marching around the world, blowing up other people's countries. That's what we've been doing, whether you like it or not. To God bless America. Well, maybe he's done doing that. Maybe we don't deserve it anymore, but maybe just a few of us can make him want to bless us again. If we stand with him and stand with the unborn, maybe. You know, and maybe for me, as a cradle traditional Catholic, maybe for me it's just a little bit easier to see what's going on here since I've lived through it all once before. When I was a kid, they did the very same thing to us in the Catholic Church. They said that we needed to back away from the polarizing dogmas, you know. We needed to move away from the divisive morality. Nobody gets that. So medieval. We need to get rid of those traditional Latin liturgies. I mean, our Protestant friends don't like those. You know what I mean? We need to do all this stuff to sort of win over the world, to curry the favor of the non-Catholics. Get with the program, you see? So that the world will give us yield up votes. That's what we were told. And guess what? It was such a lie. It was such a monumental lie. But most Catholics went along with it. Why? Because Father said, so they had to obey. They were afraid not to. They didn't know what else to do. And so, very soon thereafter, the revolution tore neighborhoods like my little neighborhood apart, tore it apart, tore so many families apart. The churches all closed. The entire systems of Catholic education collapsed. Seminaries emptied out, right? As the human element of Christ's church became essentially a plaything of the revolution. The Pope and his bishops then have essentially become the undertakers, and that's about it, undertakers of what's left of the Catholic Church in her human element. Here's one of the undertakers now.
Well, I think in the preparation of it, Deborah, it's been very special in the listening that went on beforehand, that never was part of these earlier synods on such a scale. So I think particularly the bishops who came, but not only the bishops, had a fairly good idea of what was moving in the hearts of their people.
Good one. So this is where the mighty conciliar push to throw open the windows, as John the 23rd called it, throwing open the windows to the modern world, this is where it ended up. In a cloud of woke smoke, a Catholic nightmare. You know, and I see the exact same thing happening now, only this time in pro-life, pro-God politics, the movement, what's left of it here in this country. And that, again, contributes to the dilemma that we all face. I mean, they're doing it again. Fool me once, right? Wow, it's the same exact MO. So I could be wrong, and yes, God, please, let me be wrong about what I see happening in America in conservative and pro-life politics with Donald Trump and that whole ticket. Please, God, may I be wrong. Really, I mean that. I want to be wrong more than anything else on this earth. If President Donald Trump comes out next January victorious and he declares himself on his first day in office, or his first week, first month, first year in office, I don't care. He comes out and declares himself a champion of the unborn, a champion of traditional marriage. Can you imagine? Nobody on the face of this earth will be happier if that happens than yours truly. I will come on this show happily, and I will gladly eat generous portions, plates full of humble pie, if that happens, because I'll be so happy. Nothing would make me happier in this world than to be dead wrong about this issue. Trouble is, what if I'm not?